What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there, horror lovers from all across the U.S. of A. and beyond. This is Eric Peabody, your host of the Horror Hill podcast. First off, let me give you a big thank you from the bottom of our cold, haunted hearts for sticking with us through thick and thin over the last decade. You've been the lifeblood of chilling entertainment, helping us conjure up the spine-tingling stories and nightmarish content you crave. But now, we're standing at a bit of a crossroads, and we need a hand from our beloved community. Our fearless leader, Craig Groshek, has been navigating some seriously rough waters these past few years. Financial burdens, including mounting costs and declining advertising revenue across the industry, have made it difficult to keep the gears turning without a little extra help from our friends. Craig's been giving it his all, fighting to keep both the Chilling Entertainment family, our incredible writers, voice actors, sound designers, and all the ghouls behind the scenes, safe and sound. But folks, the reality is we're running low on resources, and we need your help to keep the darkness alive. We're kicking off a GoFundMe campaign with a goal of raising $10,000. It's what we need right now to keep the ship afloat. This money will go directly to our most pressing needs, like paying off debts and making sure our talented team gets the fair wages they deserve. Listeners, without your support, we're facing a real horror story: cutting pay, losing key players, and, heaven forbid, seeing some of our favorite shows take a dirt nap, maybe for good. But with your help, we can flip the script and keep Chilling Entertainment not just alive, but thriving like a vampire at a blood bank. You can help us out right now by heading to www.helpchilling.org. That's HELPCHILLING.ORG to donate today. There are other ways to help too, such as spreading the word like wildfire on social media. Tell every horror fiend you know about our campaign and help us bring more eyes and ears to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and our other bone-chilling programs. But right now, the best thing you can do is chip in whatever you can. Every single dollar helps, and every share spreads the fear. I mean, the word. Let's keep Chilling Entertainment turning out the darkness for years to come. So please, donate today. We've got a lot more scares to share, and we'd hate to miss out on bringing you the thrills you crave. Again, you can head to www.helpchilling.org today to help out. Thank you again for your support.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Disclaimer: Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Good evening, listeners, and welcome back to Horror Hill. As always, I'm your host and narrator, Eric Peabody. Tonight, we're going to be going on a bit of a trip, first to small-town Missouri, and then to the psychedelic realms of the mind. We have author Sam Morris to thank for this hallucinogenic voyage, which comes to us in the form of his story, Plant X. In this tale, our protagonist is Matthew, a young man rueing the sudden isolation he finds himself experiencing after college. Matthew doesn't really have any close friends nearby, but he does have a friendly co-worker, Daniel. Tonight is Halloween night, and as Matthew and Daniel are finishing up the closing shift at the restaurant where they work, Daniel mentions that he's got something extra special at his house. Something foreign. Something exciting. Something trippy. Matthew, not wanting to miss out on some social time, agrees to join in, which proves to be a decision that carries some very serious consequences. You're listening to the standard edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, and we can scale back some of our less savory means of generating money for the show. By the way, you wouldn't happen to still have all of your organs, would you? And now, from author Sam Morris, I give you Plant X. "Who in their right mind would pick up a closing shift on Halloween?" Daniel said, shaking his head over a slowly rising stack of rolled silverware. "I guess our dumbasses," I replied, glancing up from my own side work, which on this particular night happened to be polishing the fine forks and knives, which I would then pass over to him before they were rolled in linens and piled neatly. We were at the host stand near the front entrance of the mom-and-pop Italian restaurant where we worked. "Yeah, that checks out," Daniel said through a light chuckle, head still down, focused on his task. "But hey, as soon as this is done, we are gonzo." "Uh-huh, yes, sir," I replied, peering up and out through the glass double doors and into the night, which overlooked an essentially empty parking lot. "What an absolute bust, though. How many tables did you even have?" "Literally two all night," Daniel responded with a resentful shrug. "Won't even be enough for gas and beer." "Lucky, I had one table all night," I said with playful aggression. "So I actually have to choose between gas and beer." We both laughed. "Well, that'd be an easy choice for me, dog," Daniel replied, reaching down into his black server's apron and pulling out an ice-cold bottle of Peroni and an opener. "Dude, come on. The bar does inventory literally tomorrow," I said, smiling and shaking my head. "It's called shrinkage, bro. Look it up," Daniel replied, peeling off the top of the bottle and turning it up into a big swig. "And we're the only ones here. And also, have you ever been to the back of house any time after 4 p.m? "Not a bad point," I said. He was right. The kitchen guys here, and also at every other restaurant I had worked at, were basically hammered for their entire shift. "You pre-gaming a party or something?" "Well," Daniel replied, "wouldn't call it a party, really. Just got a buddy coming to the apartment. We'll probably just throw down, play some Five Nights at Freddy's or something dumb like that. What about you? You got something?" I paused. No, I didn't have anything. Ever since I graduated college and moved back in with my parents, I had basically just worked and slept. I left school over a year ago and had retained almost zero social skills. I wasn't depressed or anything, but I just didn't really have any friends here back home. This was small-town Missouri. I'd moved here during high school, and everyone had already chosen their social circles. There was no room for a plus one anywhere, so I was forced to find comfort in myself and became a bit of a loner. College was fantastic for me, having been part of several clubs and meeting lifelong friends, but all of those friends were handfuls of states away now. I don't know. Couple of options, not sure which one I'll pick. Might float around a couple of parties, honestly. I lied, blatantly. My plan was to go home and help my parents pass out candy to the neighborhood kids. Not the worst thing in the world, by far, but not what a young adult should be doing on Halloween. My parents knew that, too. I'd see their concerned expressions through their masks tonight, like I did last year. I mean, dude, I know we've, like, never hung out outside of work and all, but you know you're always welcome to swing by any time, man. Daniel kindly replied, smiling and taking another gulp of his stolen beer. May not be a wild rager tonight, but hey, you're more than invited if you want to roll through. I nodded and smiled back. Maybe I should take a stab at socializing again. Who knows? Maybe it would even be fun. I could already hear my parents' relieved voices on the phone as I informed them that I, yes, the loneliest guy in town, would be attending a Halloween party with other people of my same age. They would be absolutely thrilled. And honestly, so would I. Man, thanks for the invite. I'll see what I can do, and I'll try and stop by for sure, I replied, trying to conceal my excitement. Dope. I'll text you the addy, Daniel shot back. All of the employees had each other's numbers due to group texts with the managers and whatnot. He pulled his phone out and pounded his thumbs on it for a moment. By the time he set his phone back down, I felt a telltale jolt coming from my own apron. We nodded at each other and continued in wrapping up our closing work. After about 10 minutes, we were both at the bar cashing out our tips and gathering our things, ready to forget about the miserably slow restaurant and waste of half of one of the best nights of the year. I counted my measly money and stopped by the bathroom. By the time I got out, I heard Daniel at the front door talking on the phone excitedly, almost manically. He was a big guy, about 6'3" and probably 250 pounds, with dark hair and a thick, coarse beard. However, in this moment, he may as well have been a 3-year-old girl on Christmas morning.
Dude, no actual way! You got it? How?
Daniel yelled, eyes flown open and jaw agape as he pressed the phone to his ear and listened to the other end of the line for a moment. He laughed loudly.
Ha ha! Whoa, man, I can't believe he'd let you have some! This is gonna be so awesome, bro!
Another pause.
Yeah, man, I'm just about to lock up the restaurant and then I'm a speedin' bullet to you, dude.
He looked over at me and noticed how curiously I was eavesdropping.
Oh yeah, dude, by the way, he continued. I got a buddy from work here who may swing by as well. Is that cool? I don't know if he'll want any, but like, how much is there?
Another moment of silence passed before Daniel looked at me again and gave a big thumbs up.
Sweet, dude, I'll let him know. All right, buddy, I'll be home in a few. See ya.
He hung up and gave a loud woo that rang through the entirety of the dark, empty restaurant.
Now, what on earth was that all about?
I said with a laugh, my face contorting into a very puzzled look.
Okay. So,
Daniel said before taking a big breath,
have you ever done psychedelics?
He gave me an anxious, toothy grin. I started, trying to think of what I would say next. In college, I had tried to expand my horizons a bit, but to me, that horizon stopped at the edge of beer and a little pot. I'd never tried any real drugs, and didn't even really like pot or drink a whole lot either. I wanted to match Daniel's enthusiasm, however. Tonight, I was going to have fun, and to do that, I had to try and be as hyped up as those around me. I wanted whoever I was partying with to see me as one of them.
Yeah, man, I did shrooms and stuff in college, I answered.
Daniel walked closer to me and gave me a strong, almost painful high five.
Hell yeah,
he roared.
So, my buddy's brother just got back from South America, right? He was down there on some sort of soul-searching cleanse or whatever. Well, he met up with some dudes down there who, like, go out into the jungle and find plants and frogs and stuff that make you high and hallucinate and stuff, right? Okay, whoa, I said, listening intently to this already outrageous story. Yeah, Daniel continued. So he meets these dudes, and they tell him they've found something that they've never seen before, like this weird little plant, and that it's the wildest trip you can imagine. Like, you just mix the whole plant into water and let it soak and then drink it, and then bam! He slapped his hands together for effect. Wave after wave of the most out-of-this-world visions you can imagine. His brother said it was like a miracle. He said he went to heaven and met angels and shook hands with God and stuff. Just crazy. I stood, eyes wide and mouth downturned, taking all of this information in. So, I'm guessing he gave some to your buddy, I said. Daniel nodded. Dude, yes. Told him it would make for the perfect Halloween. And apparently, one little plant is enough to get like 50 people tripped, so there's plenty to go around. What do you say, man? You in? He asked with a big, goofy smile. Well, I started. Boy, I'd always been curious about hallucinogens. Everyone I knew who had taken them seemed to really enjoy the out-of-body, personal, beautiful experience of it. They always seemed to learn something deep about themselves, too, like life-changing epiphanies and whatnot. I enjoyed being in control of myself, though. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea. Wait. No, I was going to have fun. I was going to be young and adventurous tonight. If this is what it takes, then so be it. That sounds like a damn blast, man. Count me in, I exclaimed. Daniel hollered again and gave me another stinging, large-palmed high five. Awesome, dude. Well, I'm headed there now if you just want to follow me, he said with the vigor and pep of a summer camp counselor. All right, sounds good, I replied as he held the door open for me before stepping through himself, locking it behind him. We walked to our cars, which were parked beside each other in the row furthest away from the restaurant. The night was starless and bearing down heavily on us. Man, it really feels like Halloween, you know? Daniel said, and I nodded in agreement. Dude, yeah, there's definitely just something in the air, I replied, and we both giggled. He opened his driver's side door. Okay, buddy, well, just follow me. I'll see you there, he said to me before hopping into his car. Sounds good. See you there, I replied happily before getting into my own car. He cranked the engine and sat a moment before backing out and pulling away slowly, and so I did the same. We turned out of the parking lot and onto the main thoroughfare of our little town where our workplace resided. It was about 10 o'clock, and there wasn't a sign of life anywhere. Not that there ever really was in this sleepy little place we called home. The downtown was decorated seasonally, though, and so we passed by light poles dressed in tapestries featuring pumpkins and scarecrows and all of the beloved Halloween symbols. Storefronts had hay bales and jack-o'-lanterns and skeletons displayed. I looked as I drove by.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I was actually really excited for tonight, like I hadn't been in years. The nostalgia of these traditional decorations mixed with the freshness of a promising new social event bubbled within me, escaping in a huge smile. I kept following him out of downtown and onto side streets for a few minutes. In my joyous stupor, I suddenly realized I hadn't told my parents my plans. They were probably beginning to worry. I got my phone out and dialed them, and they picked up after the first ring. "Hello?" my mom answered, her voice a little concerned. "Hey, Mom. Sorry. Just wanted to let y'all know what I'm up to tonight," I told her, excited to announce my plans. "What you're up to? You mean you're not coming home?" she responded curiously, but not suspiciously. "Actually, no," I said with a chuckle. "My buddy from work, Daniel, invited me to his Halloween party, so I'm following him to his house right now."
"Really?
Oh, that sounds like fun, she replied with a mix of relief and joy. What's going down at Daniel's? Do you know anyone else that's going to be there? He said it's just going to be kind of low-key with a few more of his buddies. I don't know them, but they all sound really cool. We're just going to watch movies and eat candy and do all the normal Halloween things, apparently, I told her in a convincing half-lie. Ah, well, that sounds great. I'm so glad you're hanging out with friends tonight, she responded before a brief pause. Oh, okay. Hey, here's your dad. He wants to say something. The audio crackled for a second before I heard my dad's voice. Hey, son, I'm happy to hear you're going to a friend's house tonight, he said with obvious warm pride. It's a shame you're too popular for your old parents now. We all laughed for a moment before he continued. Now, I just gotta say, you're old enough to have a good time, and I have no problem with that. But one thing I will say is that if there's any drinking going on at this party, just don't go driving anywhere. Deal? Oh, yeah, deal, of course, I answered truthfully. I don't even think Daniel and these guys are like that, but we'll be sure to make it safe, though, absolutely. Either way, I think we're almost to his place, so I'll have to talk to y'all later. We were getting close, as Daniel's car turned off the street and into a dimly lit apartment complex. That's fine. We won't wait up, so you feel free to spend the night there, of course, if you want. We love you, son. Happy Halloween. I love y'all, too. Happy Halloween, I replied before hanging up. It was great to tell them about my fun night of plans. I could hear the happiness in their voices that I finally had some friends to hang out with. Daniel and I rolled through the complex, made up of long, two-story brick buildings lined with white doors. There were light-up pumpkins, witches, and ghosts by doorsteps, and fake cobwebs over windows. After passing several of these buildings, we made our way to the back and Daniel parked. I followed suit, parking next to him. We both got out. Dude, this place is sweet, I told him as we walked the sidewalk over to the side stairs. Thanks, man. It's been pretty nice around here, and cheap enough to where I can survive some nights making no money, like tonight, Daniel responded with a laugh. I feel that, I said as we climbed the steps to the second story and walked past several doors before Daniel stopped at one numbered 628. Well, here we are, he said as he reached in his pocket and pulled out keys. He unlocked and opened the door, and immediately a strange, intoxicating smell poured out towards us. Oh, what is that? I said loudly, entranced and confused. That, my friend, is our personal rocket ship for the evening, Daniel replied with a devilish grin. We walked through the front door into a humble yet surprisingly tidy apartment. The entrance led us down a short hallway lined with Kansas City Chiefs and St. Louis Cardinals posters. We talked about sports quite a bit at work, so this definitely checked out. The hall spilled into a living area with a long, pale couch and a dark blue easy chair. An absolutely monstrous TV welcomed us as well. Dude, how big is your TV? I asked, my jaw falling open. 75 inches, bro. Little graduation present from the parents a couple years back, Daniel answered, as smug as a lifelong hunter showing off his most prized big game trophy. Whoa, I said as I scanned it up and down. I turned around and surveyed the rest of the common area. Past the living room was the kitchen behind a partial wall, leaving a doorway-sized path through to it. I could see a young man stirring a huge pot on the stove using a large wooden spoon. His long, curly, dark hair went all the way down to his lower back. I couldn't see his face as he was turned away from us, toiling passionately at the big, steaming container. He was wearing jeans and a sleeveless white t-shirt, showing off his numerous arm tattoos. Come in, to my house of sin, he bellowed, still facing down to the stove in front of him. Daniel rolled his eyes and smiled. For one, bro, this would be my house. And for two, if this is a sin, then send me straight to hell, he said, walking through the living room and over to the opening to the kitchen. The long-haired young man stopped stirring and turned around slowly. He had big brown eyes that were shot open wide, and he wore a mysterious yet bone-white smile. Now, now, dear Daniel, on the contrary, and you mustn't forget, it is heaven that was built for sinners.
Hell was made for lovers, he proclaimed in a low, almost transatlantic growl, raising a hand dramatically and holding intense eye contact. He was like something straight out of a Vincent Price movie. I stared in awe. Okay, bro, knock off the shtick. Daniel sneered back in a laugh, shaking his head. He glanced over to me. Sorry, he's not usually this mystic. Okay, fine, dude, but it's Halloween. I'm just trying to be ghoulish, his friend said, playfully defeated. His voice had changed to a higher-pitched, more nasally tone, replacing the fake accent with what I assumed to be his real voice. You may be ghoulish, but your eyes tell me you've been smoking that ghoul ash. You been into my weed, man? Daniel humorously interrogated. His friend stumbled. Whatever, bro. Just come meet my buddy already, Daniel responded. The long-haired fellow broke his gaze with Daniel and looked over to me, smiling. Of course, he said as he walked out of the kitchen and over to me in the living room. Pleasure to meet you, sir. The name's Roddy. He extended a friendly hand and I took it. Nice to meet you, man. I'm Matthew, I replied. Sweet, dude. I'm glad you came out tonight. It's going to be literally so amazing for all of us, he said, raising his hands and extending his fingers out of undeniable anticipation. Yeah, so, like, what even is it, exactly? I asked, raising an eyebrow. Yeah, man, you gotta give him the spiel, Daniel chimed in, curling up one side of his mouth. Of course. Come, let me show you what's up, Roddy replied, gesturing us both into the kitchen as he walked that way. We all gathered around the steaming pot on the stove. The smell was so strong and yet so undefinable. It had notes of old leather, had an almost chemical hint of citrus, and somehow also gave off Coca-Cola vibes. The steam was heavy and sent the odor throughout the entire apartment. Roddy's eyes looked almost predatory as he overlooked the bubbling brew. Boys, allow me to introduce you to what I like to call Plant X. Born deep within the Amazon jungle, this rare and mysterious form of life has been entirely untouched by man, giving no secrets, waiting in silence. That is, until now, he said, raising his index finger. Dude, come on, man, get to the point so we can stop talking and start whooshing off into space, Daniel clapped back with a smile. Whatever, Roddy snapped in response. So, yeah, my big brother went on this, like, ayahuasca cleanse in Peru last month to get his head straight, right? Well, he met these indigenous dudes that hunt for hallucinogenic plants, and they had discovered something new. Like, never before had they seen anything like it. Ever. Like, in millennia. It's this weird, bulbous little green and purple cabbage-looking deal. So, they all did it together, and it was the ride of their lives. He paused for effect, wafting the steam around with both hands. Like meeting celestial beings and playing basketball with unicorns and growing as tall as a building and jumping to the moon kind of stuff. So, like, do you just drink it? I inquired, leaning on the black refrigerator that stood tall next to the stove. Yes. So Big Bro told me that you have to cook it down for, like, an hour, then pour it up into coffee cups and stir it real good, then drink it. He said it hit him fairly quickly, but he also said it comes in waves, Roddy continued, his voice deepening. And after each wave, you have to drink another cup so the next phase can catapult you even higher. He did three waves. Wave one was like fun and hilarious. Wave two was more intense, but in a euphoric kind of way. And wave three, he paused and smiled and nodded slowly. Wave three was absolute heaven. So, like, how do you know when each wave's over? Daniel asked, inquisitively scratching his beard. Apparently, you just know. Like a three-act play kind of vibe. I figure it'll be easy to tell, Roddy answered with confidence. Daniel looked over to me, and I met his gaze and passed it on to Roddy, who smiled and reached down to turn the stove off. Well, boys, what do you say we start our engines? He exclaimed, reaching into a white painted cabinet and getting out three brown coffee mugs. I'd say it's about that time, bro,
Daniel said, walking over to the cups and picking one up and twisting it in his hand. They both looked at me, waiting for my confirmation. Yeah, guys, let's do it. It's gonna be nuts. I happily obliged before walking over and picking out my own cup.
Excelente!
Roddy shouted, dipping a big metal soup ladle into the now placid, cooling concoction. He took each of our cups and portioned out the potion till it filled halfway. Suddenly, we were all facing each other, mugs raised for a toast, ready to drink. So, like, I have to ask, but did your brother mention any bad side effects or anything? I asked Roddy with just the slightest twinge of anxiety, cup still raised. Homies, he said the only bad thing about this is that you have to return to Earth when it's over, Roddy replied with a trustworthy grin. I nodded and returned a closed-lipped smile.
Do the honors, Rod,
Daniel encouraged.
Boys, to a Halloween night we will never forget,
Roddy said softly and seriously, holding piercing eye contact for a couple of seconds with Daniel and then me.
Cheers.
Cheers!
Daniel and I echoed loud and proud, and we all put our cups together in a ceramic clink before raising them up to our open mouths. We all drank in a silent moment, swallowing the liquid in one big chug. The drink was still as hot as coffee and burned all the way down my esophagus. The taste was extraordinary, though, surprisingly different from its odor. It began with a taste like a thin curry soup, but then changed to an almost spicy, minty flavor, and then finished sweet and herbal, like a perfume for springtime.
Whoa!
I breathed in an almost grunt.
Damn!
Daniel added after sharply inhaling through puckered lips. Roddy's brow was lifted as high as it could possibly go.
Okay, now that is good,
he agreed enthusiastically. We all set our cups down on one side of the big double sink next to the fridge.
Man, I think I'd drink that even if it didn't get you zooted,
Daniel added as we all returned to a circle in the middle of the kitchen.
Definitely. That stuff is, like, insanely good,
I replied.
That's even better than I thought it'd be,
Roddy followed up.
So, like, what do we do now?
I asked, sharply glancing at both of them.
Huh, well, I guess we just wait. Shouldn't take long,
Roddy responded.
I mean, you all want to chill and watch some YouTube until it kicks in?
Daniel suggested.
Hell yeah,
Roddy answered.
Yeah, sounds good,
I said in splendid agreement. We walked out of the kitchen and back into the living area. The two of them sat on the pale-colored couch, and I parked myself in the easy chair. Daniel picked up the TV remote from in between two black coasters on a small wooden coffee table and clicked the red on button. The huge screen suddenly flared white before taking us to the Roku homepage.
Y'all cool with, like, a nature video or something? I have a few bangers in mind,
Daniel asked, and Roddy and I made agreeable noises in return. Pretty soon, we were all glued to a beautiful nature scene, full of running giraffes and zebras and delicate bioluminescent beings of the deep. After a few minutes, Roddy turned to us.
Y'all, like, feel it yet?
He asked.
Can't say I do, Daniel responded.
Nah, same here, I threw in. Okay, well, it's early. We'll be there shortly for sure,
Roddy concluded. We continued to watch the nature video in silence for a few more minutes. There was a long, drawn-out scene where they strapped a camera to the top of a hawk and followed its point of view over canyons and deserts. It was truly breathtaking. I kept checking myself to see if anything was happening within me due to the mysterious substance. Nothing had seemed to change. I stole glances over to the other boys. Their faces were pretty much blank. They looked bored.
Huh. I hope this wasn't a dud.
I hope Roddy's brother didn't just spray cologne on a handful of lettuce and tell him it was some Peruvian miracle drug. That would ruin the night entirely, and therefore my first fun outing in over a year. No, I had to give it more time. Surely something would happen soon. I contemplated just simply pretending to experience hallucinations in a few minutes if nothing changed. Maybe the other guys would follow suit and we could all just have a placebo party.
Yeah. Not a bad idea, honestly. I was self-affirming my plan when suddenly, all of the power went out in Daniel's apartment. Pitch black.
"The hell?" he shouted.
I leaned back in the easy chair, frozen.
"You pay electric this month, dude?"
Roddy taunted.
"Duh, bro, I always pay on the 5th. Stupid damn apartment complex. Somebody probably tripped something up,"
Daniel responded coarsely. Then, suddenly, the TV sprang back on, a pure white screen. We all felt dead silent, mouths falling open and pupils quickly dilating. I started to feel tingles throughout my body, like raw electricity was passing over my skin. I turned to the other boys, who were both raising their arms, studying them closely.
"Are y'all feeling this?"
I whimpered.
Yeah, dude,"
Roddy answered, voice trembling. Daniel couldn't even muster a response. He just kind of grunted in a high pitch. Then, a voice came from the bleak screen.
"Are you prepared?"
A low, booming question rang out through the living room. I was absolutely floored. I was paralyzed in my seat, unable to tear my eyes away from the mesmerizing light. I couldn't even look over to the others.
"Are you prepared?"
The voice repeated itself, this time much louder. It seemed to want some kind of answer from us. I finally was able to peek over to the couch. The two boys were visibly shaking in their seats. They both slowly turned their eyes to me, heads heavily vibrating in awe and fear.
Yes,
I stated in a struggle, looking back into the eternal, unbearably white square. I darted my eyes back to Daniel and Roddy. They both looked absolutely terrified. I gave them a wide-eyed twitch toward the screen, imploring them to follow my lead.
Yes,
Roddy spoke first.
"Come on, Dan,"
he whispered over to the seat beside him. Daniel took his time, trying to summon every ounce of energy he had just to form one word. He began to nod, first softly, then swelling in power until it was almost violent and rabid.
"Yes! Yes!"
he shouted. Roddy and I managed to smile at his compliance. We all turned our attention back to the huge, beaming portal before us, awaiting further communication. The blank screen began to blink slowly. On, off, on, off, on, off. The three of us shot looks at each other, our rightful confusion in unison. The winking light began to increase its tempo. I stared deep into the intermittent image of bright nothingness, eventually unfocusing my eyes and falling into a relaxed, almost hypnotized state. The visual rhythm acted as white noise for the eyes, and the rest of the world sizzled away around it. I was starting to experience ego death, beginning to lose my sense of self entirely. I wasn't even sure I had a body anymore. Right as I was about to lose consciousness, the swiftly pulsing, icy slideshow came to an end, being replaced by an image of a beautiful green field. Healthy grass, little sunflowers, dandelions, and wild strawberry plants reached up toward a cloudless aquatic sky. The juxtaposition from the pale void to this marvelously detailed, lovely landscape was almost enough to make me cry. The definition was unlike anything I had seen on screen before. It just looked so real, better than real, even. The other boys and I passed around more looks to acknowledge that we were all on the same page.
"Ooh,"
Daniel mustered through down-curled lips. Roddy shifted pleasantly in his seat.
"It's beautiful. It's so beautiful," he said in hushed awe.
"It's just too real," I added, before standing up out of the easy chair. My legs felt like they were made of concrete. With incredible difficulty, I slowly drudged my way over toward the TV.
"What you doing, dude?"
Daniel slowly slurred.
"It's just too real,"
I said as I finally made my way right in front of the screen. The TV looked like it was 50 feet high and eternally wide from where I was standing. I reached out my right hand and began to move it toward the lush life on display before me. As I moved my fingers over a small patch of greenery, I was suddenly taken aback. I felt it. I felt the grass. I could feel each soft blade on my tingling fingertips. Guys, you gotta get over here, I announced, not peeling my focus away from the dimensional oddity in front of me. You won't believe it. It's real. They both struggled their weighty legs over to where I was and began to pet the screen as well. Their eyes and mouths swung wide open in amazement as they experienced the same sensation of feeling the field for themselves. Daniel picked a sunflower and pulled it out of the projected field and into our reality. Impossible, he whispered, twisting the flower between his thumb and index finger.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The three of us silently kept running our hands over the plants for another few moments. Then, Roddy noticed something new on screen. What is that? He asked, pointing to a small, dark object on the field's horizon. Watching closely, I saw something that was slowly getting bigger and bigger. No, not bigger. Closer. It was something running through the field and toward our vantage. As it got closer, its details grew into communicable recognition. Is that a bear? I asked, almost in jest. It was definitely a small bear, but it wasn't a realistic bear like you'd find in the Appalachian or Alaskan ranges. It was man-made, doll-like. A whole-ass teddy bear, as a matter of fact. Light brown, felt fur wrapped into a sweet, friendly little body. As it grew closer and closer, I could point out big, dark button eyes with two matching stitched nostrils. It wore a goofy, toothless smile in an upturned red crescent shape. It had small, spherical ears. At its side were two pairs of short, round, clawless arms and legs. Soon, it approached close enough to fill the screen, perpendicular to the stark green and blue horizon. Outrageously, it began to speak to us.
Hey, fellas, mind if I join you?
It squeaked at us in a cute, high voice, as if it was in a Saturday morning children's TV show. The three of us didn't know what to say.
I mean, sure, yeah, right?
Roddy answered it, side-eyeing both Daniel and I for confirmation. We both flinched our shoulders in casual allowance.
Hooray! Just grab my front paws and pull, pull, pull,
the little screen-bound bear said in return. With confused giggles, Daniel and I raised our hands to its projected paws and amazingly were able to pass through the plane again and feel its soft wrist areas with a light squeeze. The teddy bear squealed with childlike delight as we lifted up its pillow-light frame out of the screen and onto the living room floor. In our reality, our new friend stood about 4 feet tall, bigger than a toy, but smaller than a threat. Roddy ran and flipped on the ceiling fan light so we could see our new guest more properly. Soon, we were all standing around it, staring down in continued astonishment.
So, like, who are you?
Daniel blurted with a deadpan voice, still unable to process what was happening. The bear jumped from the floor to the top of the coffee table, so light it almost floated, and landed with a soft thud. It outstretched its adorable arms like a vaudevillian master of ceremonies.
My name is... Well, I can't really say. If you were to hear my real, full name, then your minds would immediately dissolve into insanity, and out of panic you would all stick things deep inside your ears and cause lots of damage. Trust me. It's not a pretty sight.
Fair enough,
Daniel responded in a whimper.
I can say it starts with the letter A, though.
The bear continued and held out a plushy paw. Magically, the letter A appeared over its palm in a lime green vapor before it floated up to the ceiling and dissipated. We all watched in astute amazement.
But I usually tell all of my new friends to simply call me Andy Bear. Although I come in many forms depending on what level of consciousness I'm perceived in, this disguise is symbolic of fun. Lots of fun. So, let's get to it.
Wait. So, you're like some kind of guide? Are you going to be here the whole time?
I asked, rubbing my chin with my left hand.
Well, yes. Well, kinda. Sometimes I'm a guide. Sometimes I'm a teacher of sorts. Sometimes I'm just a really good friend, like I am now.
Andy Bear answered.
What do you mean, sometimes you're a good friend?
Roddy inquired, not having missed that small detail of the explanation.
Are y'all ready to come play and have fun?
The bear continued, having apparently fallen deaf to the most recent question.
We were a bit lost, but we weren't here to philosophize. We were here to party. So we all nodded.
Great! Then grab on and hold tight!
We all put our hands on the shoulders and torso of the soft, sentient toy standing on the coffee table. We squeezed tight on its delicate, stuffed fabric, awaiting further instruction.
Remember, hold on tight and don't fall off. Ready, set, go!
We were all suddenly surrounded by spiraling sparkles, like something straight out of a Disney classic. We began to float, about a foot from the floor, before slowly flying over toward the screen, which stretched out as wide and tall as the entire wall. I flinch as we didn't slow down at all, before passing through the TV display like an open window. Daniel let out a small, excited yell as we passed through the pristine portal. Seamlessly, we were suddenly right there in the beautiful landscape. The temperature was perfect, probably around 70 degrees. The lush greenery decorated endless, rolling hills out in every direction as far as the eye could see. Above us, the sun beamed down warm and friendly. It was truly paradise. Any anxiety or confusion pertaining to our situation was immediately replaced with euphoric joy. It felt like living inside your favorite song. Golden, endless happiness radiated throughout my entire body. Even in all my years since, I still can't imagine a better feeling. Looking around at the others, I knew they were on the same wavelength. We couldn't even form words. We just began to laugh, finally letting go of Andy Bear. Starting with a low giggle, our volume began to accelerate quickly, and soon we were all hooting and hollering like a bunch of untreatable lunatics.
Pretty cool, huh? How about we dance? Hit it, boys!
Andy pointed an arm toward an empty patch of grass that opened up with a small circular stage rising out of the ground. On this stage were four other teddy bears, all on instruments. They all looked just like Andy. I guess they all were Andy, really. Three of them were sitting, their legs wrapped around slightly raised bongo drums. The other one was standing behind them, holding a saxophone. The drummers began to play a conga rhythm in perfect synchronization, an infectious little beat. All of us in the audience grabbed hands and began to spin in a circle, still laughing uncontrollably. I was surprised that euphoria wasn't escaping our open smiles and beams of blinding light. We all just looked into each other's eyes, only able to communicate our perfect joy through maniacal guffaws. The bear on saxophone chimed in with the bongos, adding a beautiful, squealing melody that floated over the beat like a rising feather. We just kept spinning and laughing, the heavenly world twirling around us, eventually into just a colorful, blurry glow. We kept dancing around to the beautiful music for hours, maybe even longer. Here, there was no time. We were full of eternal energy, unable to even begin to grow tired or feel a need to stop. Andy also seemed to be having the time of his life as we held onto him and spun him a couple of feet off of the ground. He was bubbling out a cartoonish giggle through his red-stitched mouth.
"Isn't this fantastic?"
he shouted at us. We, of course, couldn't really answer, but he knew that we concurred.
If only it could last forever.
We all kept blissful eye contact with each other as the colors of the landscape spun around us like a tornadic rainbow. Daniel and Roddy's mouths and eyes were as wide open as physically possible, their pupils the size of quarters. Our laughing had not calmed the entire duration, which had felt like an entire lifetime at this point.
"We've got to go home now, fellas," Andy Bear continued. "But have no fear, there's still plenty ahead for you. I hope you've had fun. I know I did."
The music from the band swelled in volume as the colors around us began to change, growing brighter and brighter until it all became a surging white. Our vision was swiftly lost as the four of us were consumed by the radiance. I lost consciousness, and my entire reality was suddenly plunged into a moment of darkness. Several seconds of absolute void passed before my eyes shot open again. I was back in Daniel's living room, sitting right there in the easy chair like nothing had happened. The TV was off, but the overhead light was still on. I looked over to the couch, and there were the other boys, who were stirring into wakefulness as well. Roddy nervously tapped on his chest and arms, checking to see if he was real and still alive. Daniel goofily stared at his hands.
Are we back?
He wondered aloud.
I guess so. I guess that was the first wave,
Roddy answered softly.
That was insane,
Daniel said as he jolted up from his seat. Roddy and I stood quickly as well, and the three of us met in a group hug in the middle of the living room by the coffee table. We were still mostly speechless, offering exhausted, sober laughs to each other before releasing our embrace.
I can't believe it, I said with a closed-lipped smile. I cannot believe it. That was so amazing.
Dude, I know. Probably best thing that's ever happened to me,
Daniel replied, shaking his head and looking at the floor.
Yeah, same here, Roddy added. That was like straight up actual nirvana. I wish we could have just stayed there with a dope-ass little bear, man.
Well, if that was the first wave, just imagine how awesome the next waves are gonna be,
Daniel said confidently.
Dude, good point. Good point. As incredible as that was, maybe it was like mild compared to what's next,
I affirmed joyously.
Bingo. I say we re-up on the good stuff and strap in again ASAP,
Roddy said. Within 2 minutes, we had all gone to the kitchen and swilled down another mug full of the magic plant juice, and were seated again in the living room, anxiously awaiting what beautiful experience we were to have next. We had turned on another nature documentary, this time featuring a variety of water-dwelling birds. About 15 minutes passed in mostly silence, each of us constantly checking on ourselves to see if anything was beginning to happen again.
Come on, I'm ready. Let's go.
Daniel cut through the patient yet expectant quiet.
I know, bro. Didn't take this long the first time,
Roddy joined in.
Yeah, for real. Maybe it's...
I started to say, but couldn't finish my thought, as everything was suddenly plunged back into total darkness. Life was once again blotted out for a long moment before I regained consciousness. I heard myself gasp desperately as my eyes reopened. The first thing I noticed was that all was quiet. In my fuzzy disorientation, I started to take in my surroundings. I was in a room, a strange room, more like a chamber of sorts. I was completely alone. There was no sign of Roddy or Daniel. I was sprawled on my back, and I reached out and felt stone floors beneath me as I stood up. The room was circular, about 100 feet in diameter. I did a full spin, my eyes consuming all there was to see. Equally spaced around the room were beautiful white marble columns standing against the walls. There must have been at least 20 of them. Thick veins of gold laced the pearly pillars, crawling upward like vines. On top of each column were large glass bulbs, with fire burning in each, unattached to a wick or a coil. Their light splashed around the room in a warm glaze. I looked up and was immediately astonished. There was no ceiling in this room. In my disbelief, I saw that the chamber opened up into the night sky, except the heavenly bodies were pulled way closer than I had ever seen. I could see the dust of galaxies and nebula like they were low clouds. A comet softly snowed its way across, left to right, its long tail fanning out behind it in a slowly widening ribbon, like a projector beam before it hits a screen. Purple, green, and yellow stars of all sizes beamed down on me, with breathing halos sparkling around each. I sat back down, too struck by the beauty to remain standing, and so I could get a more panoramic eyeful. Over to the edge, where the sky met the walls of stone, something else caught my attention. A small, blinking light, slowly growing brighter and brighter. It shone a brilliant, pale gold. It was moving toward me. As it got closer, I saw that it wasn't one star, but two, flying in tandem. It quickly came so close to me that I had to turn my head down as the blinding light filled the circular chamber. I fell prostrate on the stone floor and covered my eyes, quickly succumbing to the brightness and the heat of the approaching astronomical duo. "Do not cower," a voice suddenly and smoothly rang out from above. I began to shake involuntarily, figuring I was about to be disintegrated at any moment. "Arise, Matthew. Do not fear," the voice encouraged me as the blinding light beyond my hand-cupped eyes began to soften and dim. I decided to obey the suggestion and sat up and back on my knees, keeping a trembling hand to my eyes. Through my fingers, I could see the silhouette of a humanoid figure floating into the chamber, growing smaller and dimmer until I could make out more detail. I lowered my hand and got a full view of my new company. The figure landed on the stone in front of me. It was a woman, about 8 feet tall and glowing with angelic luster. She wore a floor-length dress, its fabric pieced together with thousands of diamonds. It had no sleeves, and her arms were strong and bronzed, with silver rings and bracelets on all of her fingers and both wrists. Her neck was long and elegant, enhanced by a necklace with a striking emerald stone. Her countenance beamed out like a lighthouse, with smiling green eyes and matching lipstick. On her head was a golden crown, pieces jutting up triangularly from an equally priceless headband. She was covered in the warm residual light from when she appeared as the double star, although now pleasurably visible. It was too much to take, although I couldn't tear my eyes away, unblinking at the glory of it all. She was a goddess in plain sight, right there with me. Who are you?" my shaking voice finally spit out after moments of awed muteness. "Matthew, you have already asked me this question, and you know I cannot say." She answered like a mother reminding her child of an important yet simple lesson it had already learned multiple times. "It would be too much for you. Even in this state, I had to terribly decrease my energies so that I could appear before you in a way that your mind could understand." I heard her words, but still didn't truly understand. Taking her all in with my eyes and ears was almost too much, though. I couldn't imagine what she meant, saying this was a lesser level of her being. And she said I had already asked her name before? Did that mean she was Andy Bear as well? Andy did mention that he had many forms, which would help the three of us throughout our drug-fueled journey. I figured he meant he would be a variety of different cuddly little animals, not some immortal angel from the depths of space. Regardless, this piece of the amalgamation of the resident nameless being was absolutely stunning. I was growing overwhelmingly infatuated, and my praise could no longer be contained within me. I love you," I said, raising my hands high above my head in an act of worship.
"No!"
Her voice changed from royally sweet to monstrously deep and gritty. I covered my face out of terror. "No, Matthew, you mustn't," she continued, her voice returning to soft, silky perfection. "You mustn't sit there and revere me as a god. I am not here to be admonished or praised by you. I am here to help you as a dear friend. Also, you mustn't love me." Her eyes grew a darker shade of green as her tone got more serious. "You are doomed to what you love, Matthew. You must not be doomed to me."
I don't understand," I responded in blatant confusion.
"In this place, you are to be tested. In this place, you are to find out who you truly are," the luminous angel said, outstretching her left arm, jewelry shooting out sharp sparkles. "If you concede yourself to me through your love, then you will have failed. Man's greatest gift and ability is to love. It is also his greatest curse, his greatest pain. The three of you have been brought here to be tried, to be taught the ultimate lesson. If you succeed in this trial, you will be rewarded with a crown of wisdom. Fail, and you will be deeply punished, purging your iniquities until you realize the gravity of your mistake." The three of us, Daniel and Roddy, they hadn't even occurred to me this whole time. "Where are they? Where are the others? Where are my friends?" I asked quickly and sincerely. "They are near," she answered softly and solemnly. "They are with me in neighboring solar systems, in their own courts. My crueler divisions have chosen them, however. The weaker of you have been chosen by the more venomous pieces of me. They are failing as we speak, Matthew. My sisters are not holding back or correcting them from their desires. I chose you. I chose you because I see great strength. I see a resilient spirit within you." I took it all in, trying to make sense of everything she was saying. It's a test? And Daniel and Roddy are failing? But I'm not. I'm being shown some kind of mercy from a heavenly being. How am I not failing as well? I literally just did the one thing I wasn't supposed to do, proclaiming my love haphazardly. Why are the others failing and yet I'm not? Why am I being spared punishment and being shown grace? I asked humbly. "The others are actively throwing themselves, body and spirit, at me. They are not listening to reason. They are taken by lust. They are fools, tossing their love away without even a moment's consideration. I can read you, Matthew. You are slower to act on the strong pulls of your inner evil. Your mind is older than your brain. I can see your light," she said, smiling down at me with an almost longing gaze. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much," I replied, finally standing up and slowly walking toward the angel, stopping about 10 feet away from her. A comforting heat rode the waves of her light and caressed my face. "So, what do I do? What am I supposed to do now?"
"You must return home now, Matthew. You have been seen as worthy, your will being malleable but unbroken in my presence," she answered with a placid certainty.
"What about the others?" I pleaded.
"They have chosen their fate. They have given their souls over to temptation without even a moment's hesitation, and must now be punished severely," she said, words dripping with poisonous judgment.
No, I have to go to them," I argued. I couldn't blame them for failing this test. They were humans, just like me. I had just been given mercy while they hadn't. It wasn't fair. They were my friends, in a world so sparse with friends, and I had to stand up for them.
"They have been sent to punishment out of their own free will, Matthew. It is their destruction, not yours," the angel shot back.
"I don't care," I returned fire. "Listen, whoever you are, you claim to be able to see inside me, right? Can't you see how lonely I've been recently? Can't you see how desperately I've been in need of true friendship? I know that I don't know Daniel and Roddy well at all. I mean, hell, they're arguably terrible influences on me, but they don't deserve this. They're just as human as I am, and I'm no better. I have to go to them. I have to try to help them. I was as honest and serious as I could be, only wanting to be around the others that I had claimed as friends. A voice in the back of my mind wondered if either Daniel or Roddy would do the same for me if the roles were reversed. No, that didn't matter. In times like this, I had to be the friend to them that I myself needed so severely. I had to at least try and help them wherever they were. The angel stood in contemplative silence, staring at me with a slightly lowered brow, her visage as blazing as ever. She crossed her arms, and her diamond-covered dress jingled with a soothing, crystalline rattle. "You disappoint me, Matthew," she said sternly. "You disappoint me greatly. I have tried to show you mercy in the face of pain, patience in the court of ruin. I have forgiven your immature casting of love to me, only for you to clasp your mortal loneliness onto two perfect strangers. Strangers who wouldn't even blink an eye if they were in your position. I see them for who they are, just as I see you. They are selfish creatures. They wouldn't come to your aid even if they had rewards to gain. Even if that's true, I don't care," I defiantly barked back. I had made up my mind, regardless of her disdain. "I don't care what they would do if they were here where I am. The truth is, I'm here, and they are somewhere in need. I have to go to them. Send me. Send me to where they are." She listened intently, her sour scowl slowly relaxing as she recognized the absolution in my words. She knew there was no convincing me otherwise. "Very well. If you wish to go to your so-called friends and join in their punishment, then so be it. You have been blessed with free will, and I cannot stop you in your efforts." The angel paused and took a deep, almost mournful breath. "This is goodbye, Matthew. Goodbye," she concluded, slowly raising her arms and closing her emerald eyes. The stone floor beneath me began to crack and break as the entire roofless room began to shake violently under the eternal tapestry of stars and space. The beautiful marble and gold columns fell, extinguishing the flames adorning them. I was losing my footing quickly as stones began to fall down through a slowly opening hole in the floor. I slipped and my right leg plunged down and through where it had stood. I held on to the crumbling floor around me, my arms and hands desperately trying to keep the rest of my body from falling. I looked up at the angel. She was floating again, arms still spread wide. Her shining glory was as brilliant as ever as she began to grow. Her eyes were locked with mine, and I could see an emerald tear crawl down her cheek. She continued to grow and grow with heat and light, until she was once again a blinding pair of stars. I couldn't take the piercing rays, having to throw my hands over my eyes, causing me to lose my grip and fall through the ever-opening floor. Darkness and wind choked me as I dropped, free-falling through an obsidian sky. There were no stars here, no moons, no nebula or comets, just pure blackness and hopelessness. I fell for what seemed like an eternity before I began to see a light quickly approaching from below. As the light grew brighter, my fall actually seemed to be slowing down. It was like an invisible parachute had been deployed, and I was floating down slowly rather than plummeting to my certain death. I looked and began to make out the roof of a house, zooming its approach into my downward field of vision. Within seconds, I had landed softly in the grass of a large front yard, having bent my knees to brace for impact. It didn't hurt at all, and I quickly got my bearings. I twitched my eyes over everything that I could see, still reeling over the horrific fall. Standing in a yard, I was looking up a stone pathway that led to a house. Surrounding the yard was a short wall of fire, about 3 feet high all around. Beyond the devilish perimeter, there was nothing but darkness, the kind from which I had just fallen through. The entire property couldn't have been more than an acre.
I turned and got a good look at the house. It was three stories, painted dark purple with white trim around large bay windows. The bottom story had a wraparound porch, also painted white, with elbow-high handrails and matching latticework supporting it. The center of the roof was steep and gabled, with two sharp turrets with small windows on its right and left. Dim orange light spilled out of all of the windows. A paved pathway led from the blazing wall to the front door, large and painted dark red. Standing on the wraparound porch were at least 20 figures wearing black cloaks, large hoods covering their faces. "What the?" I whispered to myself. The ghastly group began to make noise, nothing like I had ever heard from humans. No, it sounded more like an ever-growing scream from a large army of insects, a metallic rattle, similar to a tree full of cicadas in the summertime. It grew and grew in volume until I could almost bear it no longer. But I had already gone through so much, and with a fresh burst of bravery, I decided I wouldn't let these strange figures intimidate me. I ran up the stone pathway and onto the porch to the front door. The horrid, hooded chorus stopped their hellish singing all at once. I turned, side to side, ready for some kind of attack. However, none of them moved an inch, all still facing out toward the yard like statues. I turned back to the door and grabbed the large, old metal knob and twisted it hard. It opened with a loud crack, and I pushed the door in. More darkness inside. No sign of where the orange light from the windows was coming from. I side-eyed the silent hoods on the front porch one last time to make sure they weren't moving. They remained as still as gravestones, so I entered the house and was quickly enveloped in shadow. The door slammed behind me, not of my own doing. I couldn't see a thing, so I reached out my hands, trying to feel for anything that would help me realize what I was walking into. Slowly moving to my left, I felt a wall. Old, chipped paint fell to the floor under my fingers as I began to blindly follow where the room led. As I carried on, the air began to grow cooler and cooler. After about 5 minutes of my snail's pace, I felt the room come to an end. I touched out in front of me, and my hands hit a wooden surface. Imagining where a doorknob might be, I reached out and amazingly felt cold, bulbous metal. I turned it and heard a familiar crack. I opened the door. I was led out of darkness, and an ominous old foyer welcomed me. It was a two-story room, complete with a grand staircase that led up to an elegant mezzanine, where the source of light was coming from. An otherworldly orange glow poured over the banisters and down to me, coming from places I couldn't yet see. Suddenly, as I stood in silence, thinking of my next move, a tortured voice blasted out from above.
"Please! Please stop! Please!"
I could hear Roddy's voice echoing through the foyer like a fire alarm. It was coming from upstairs. He paused, then let out a scream that tore into my sanity, squealing in pain louder and higher than any man, woman, or child I'd ever heard, even in the most horrific films. He kept on with his piercing cry for several moments, and I had to slap my palms to my ears out of terror and shock. Then he suddenly stopped, the large room falling into a deathly quiet. I lowered my hands and held my breath. I slowly walked over to the staircase and craned my neck to get any kind of view of the second level. On three of the four walls of the mezzanine above, I saw huge dark red doors, sprawling up probably 20 feet, the high Victorian ceiling not much further up beyond. On the ceiling was a painted depiction of hell, covering its entirety. In the center, a large, swirling inferno, being fed by the black, burnt bodies of hundreds of people being thrown in from all sides by red, smiling demons of all grisly sizes. A large bay window at the front-facing side of the second story allowed the orange rays of the outside firelight to come splashing in,
the sole reason for any visibility in this house of evil. I slowly began to climb the staircase. It was carpeted with a matching dark red hue. The bottom stair was about 30 feet wide, and each subsequent step grew shorter and shorter all the way to the top. It creaked and groaned under me as I slowly summited the rise. I crouched as I came to the top, doing a much closer look around. Roddy's screams seemed to have come from behind the door on the left-hand side of the staircase, as observed from the floor below. I shot my eyes over there. Above the huge door was a small window, equally as wide as the door itself, about 8 feet across. A hazy orange glow escaped from within the room behind it. Glancing at the other two doors to my front side and to my right, I could see they had identical design. I began to leave the staircase, slowly walking in the low light around the mezzanine and over to the room where I believed Roddy to be. I approached the door, which stood mountainous and condescending before me. It had a doorknob similar to the other two I had used, except this one was jet black, like an unmarked eight ball in pool. I tried to open it, slowly and quietly, but it wouldn't budge. I leaned my right ear hard against the huge door, trying to hear anything at all, any sign of Roddy. Nothing. I waited there for a few more moments, the wooden door warm on my right cheek. Still nothing. I leaned away, feeling defeated, looking the door up and down. What was I supposed to do? I stood in place, trying to spin together the yarns of a plan using my possible options, when suddenly, behind me, I heard a loud noise, a deep pop from across the two-story room. I jerked around. The door opposite from me had opened. It slowly creaked about 2 feet into the walkway, a viscous, serrated squall that revealed a tall column of hellish light from the room within. I froze, staring at the new opening, unblinking. A faint noise floated out across to me. It sounded like someone who was trying to communicate while having their mouth taped shut. It sounded like Daniel. I had to investigate. I had to go to him. Leaning down slightly, with my right hand tracing the banister, I crept around over toward the cracked open door. Once I got close enough, I pressed my back to the near side of the door frame, twisting my head over my left shoulder to try and get a peek into the room. From this angle, I didn't have much to see, besides more red carpet and more high ceiling. I slowly leaned my head in until the orange light covered half my face. I gasped sharply as a scene of brutality laid itself out for my painful viewing. It was a large room. Flushed with the door on the opposite side was a huge, roaring fireplace with a stone chimney towering up from it, black char surrounding the mouth. The light from that fireplace was more than enough to see the grisly activity taking place. There was Daniel, in the center of the room, tied to a wooden post that rose about 10 feet. He was sitting on the floor, legs spread, with his bound arms fixed upwards, as if he was lazily celebrating a score from one of his favorite teams. His head was low, slowly bouncing, like he was trying and failing to stay awake. He had been stripped of his clothes entirely, and his body was covered in deep, sprawling lacerations. Surrounding him in a circle were 8 hooded figures, just like those who were standing guard on the porch. With dark, rotten hands, they each held back a leashed, muzzled, wolf-like beast. They were much larger than normal wild dogs, about 4 feet high and 8 feet long, not including their long tails, which impatiently whipped the ground behind them. They were covered in thick, black, matted, greasy-looking fur. Inflamed red eyes pierced toward Daniel from above each muzzle, which were all made of rusted iron fashioned into a small cage. They stood on 4 thick legs, held up by large paws, each adorned with 3 down-curved claws, which were at least 6 inches in length and bone-white. Their claws were as sharp as scalpels, ripping up the carpet below them. The creatures were scratching and snarling, anxious to tear into a manic frenzy that only starvation can induce. In the center, the tied-up Daniel continued to bounce his head slowly, never raising it high enough to see his face. His dark hair was soaking wet, as if olive oil had been poured over him. He started to groan. Maybe he was waking up. Maybe I could get his attention somehow and let him know I was there, even though I had absolutely no ideas for an escape plan. I pushed my face a couple more inches into the room so that when he raised his head higher, he could possibly see me. He moaned louder, finally raising his face to eye level. Chills shot across my skin, and my stomach turned sour. Daniel wasn't taped up. His lips had been haphazardly sewn shut. 5 black stitches spread across his mouth, pulled through small, bloody piercings. He wouldn't be able to see me, either. Both of his eyes had been removed, leaving only gaping, dark sockets with dark red trails leading down his face. He was fully conscious now, suppressed shrieks of agony escaping through his sealed lips. All I could do was watch in horror at my friend's demise. The beasts circling him were growing more restless, growling louder and louder through their muzzles and tugging angrily at their hooded master's leashes. Daniel continued his performance of audible pain, growing in volume for a moment, and then fizzling out into a pathetic, childlike sob that couldn't even produce tears. I heard a crackling sound coming from the corner of the room that was mostly hidden by the huge, slightly open door I was looking through. I closed one eye and put the other to the slivered opening that the hinges made and saw where this new, strange noise was coming from. In that corner was a lacquered wooden table with an old record player on top. Another hooded figure was adjusting the needle over pressed vinyl with its disgusting, dead hand. The crackling went on for a few seconds, and then turned into music. I recognized the song immediately. It was the lively, upbeat intro to ELO's Shine a Little Love. My heart sped up. I was utterly floored, hearing a song I loved so much in this situation of doom and misery. I turned my attention back to the encircled Daniel, leaning back around the door so I could get the same view as before. The music was loud, but not so loud as to where I couldn't still hear Daniel's whines. He was slowly rolling his head around his shoulders, sliding his bare legs around the floor, and flinching his bound arms. He was becoming more desperate and less human, sensing an impending attack from grisly enemies that he could only sense through his frightened ears. The cloaked wranglers all, at once, began to reach toward the heads of the wolf-like beasts and unlatch their muzzles, which fell to the floor with iron jangles. The devil dogs barked, howled, and roared with putrid, starving lust. They could finally bare their teeth, yellow and as big as pocket knives, which protruded from their gray, fleshy snouts. They could not be held back any longer. The classic ELO record arrived at its timeless chorus as Daniel let out another surgically covered cry, and the hooded executioners dropped their leashes. I watched with agonizing helplessness as the beasts swarmed on Daniel like sharks on a wounded, innocent seal. They all dove mouth first onto his body, each trying to pick out their own personal morsels. Daniel's head was shaking like he was being electrocuted, as teeth and claws tore into every inch of his flesh. One of the hounds latched its jaws onto the top of his skull and swiftly scalped him, sending streams of blood down his face and the highest shriek through his tight lips that he had mustered thus far. I couldn't take it anymore. I turned away from the horrible scene, falling to the walkway carpet and scooting myself out of sight, my back to the wall by the doorframe. I held my face in my hands as the sound of Daniel's death, accompanied by 70s music, continued to pierce my ears. After another couple moments of manic, snarling, animal feeding sounds, I began to hear Daniel yelling, full-voiced. His stitching must have been breached, either by his own will or by razor-sharp, unforgiving force. His was a scream of the insane, reserved for when all hope is lost and when all that exists is suffering. After another long, unbearable moment, he was suddenly silent. The beasts began to quiet down slowly, their abhorrent appetites finally satisfied. Soon, all that could be heard was the heavy, relieved panting of those nourished killers. I couldn't move, entirely traumatized by what I had just witnessed. With shallow breathing, I simply continued to listen in, unable to do anything else. Above the low, fulfilled sounds of the devil dogs came a celebratory cheer from the hooded figures, in the same cicada-like steely rattle as I had heard on the front porch. As tears began to slide down my face, the door to Daniel's room was suddenly slammed shut, harshly vibrating the wall I was leaning against. It was over. I didn't save Daniel. I didn't help him at all. I sobbed into my hands, my knees pulled to my head as I sat. I stayed there for several minutes, mourning my lost friend and my damaged psyche. Eventually, I raised my head in a big breath and looked out across the dimly lit mezzanine level, my brow raised. The once locked door that I had first tried, where I had heard Roddy's voice coming from, had now slid open, pouring warm rays over a couple feet of carpet. "Roddy," I whispered. I now knew that timing meant everything when it came to even having a chance to save him. In a final surge of bravery, coming from a part of my mind that I didn't even know existed before tonight, I sprang up and ran around and back to Roddy's door, kicking it wide open. It was heavy against my shoe, but swung inward quickly and made a loud bang as it hit the wall inside. It was another large room, similar to Daniel's, except for the interior layout. This one was more elegant, like the royal suite at the top of a 5-star Parisian hotel. The walls were a beautiful emerald and gold color, with columns of diamond patterns every few feet. In the far left corner, a beautiful marble white grand piano. There was a sleek black granite bar taking up most of the wall on the right side, backed by a mirror rising halfway up the ceiling, held up by 3 crystal shelves. Beautiful glass bottles rested on each rung. Around the room were lavish paintings of nude women and statues of Greek heroes and busts of philosophers. I almost felt a wave of relief, as if this was a safe place, until I turned my attention toward the far center of the room. My muscles clenched, and my stomach became toxic. The glands in my mouth secreted saliva, which I quickly swallowed, trying not to immediately vomit right then and there. There was a large stone fireplace in this room as well, its dancing flames the sole light source for all of the grand luxury. Bowing before the hearth was a pink, bleeding mass, a cruel conglomeration of exposed muscles and tendons. Hanging above the fireplace was a game trophy. It was a human skin, stretched tightly with 5 nails on its limbs and unrecognizable face. What did look familiar about it was long, dark, curly hair falling down from the scalp and onto the shoulder area, with tattoos traveling down the leather to the ends of both arms. It was Roddy. I was shocked that I hadn't even noticed a large armchair to the right of the skinned body below, a much larger cloaked figure sitting in it and watching the fire, with 4 elk-like antlers curling backwards out of the lip of a black hood. On the left armrest, a black, scaly hand with long, bloody claws held a wooden pipe. The creature raised the pipe to its hidden mouth for a moment, and then set it back down. Slowly, in smoke, the letter A, bright green, floated up from the front of its hood and all the way past Roddy's skin, dissipating at the ceiling. All of it was
way too much to bear. I fell to my knees on the dark red carpet, painfully retching up pale bile and clutching my stomach. After two more horrendous hurls, I raised my face, wet with sweat and mess, throwing my glazed eyes back to the fireplace. The armchair was empty. I scanned the room left to right, reeling from sickness and confusion, with deep, troubled breaths. There was no sign of the large hooded monster anywhere. Still on my knees in a pile of my own puke and dwindling sanity, I turned toward the sleek bar area to my right. "You know, I think I could go for a drink. What about you, Roddy?" I heard myself say in an exhausted, lunatic voice that I didn't even recognize. I had finally snapped, losing my grip on any handles of hope. But hey, why not enjoy a cocktail by the fire with a friend? I started to get up, a damp smile forming across my face. That's when I heard it. From right behind me, the all-too-familiar rattle, like millions of tiny, rusted metal wings clanging together at once. A swelling orchestra of nightmares. The maddening percussion of pain. I wasn't scared, though. The fear tank within me had emptied, dry of even the scantest fumes. As the terrible noise grew louder, I turned my attention back above the roaring fireplace, to the outermost layer of my newest and arguably most unfortunate friend. "Rain check, Roddy. Have an extra one for me, buddy." I closed my eyes, giving myself up entirely to the dark and to the sea of hellish sound around me. I drew a deep breath through my nose. A low, grisly, percolating growl began right above my head. I exhaled through my mouth. Then, all in an instant, a loud roar and a white-hot flash of sharp pain all around my midsection, right above my waistline. After that, I was gone. After a period of nothingness, perhaps a couple seconds, perhaps hundreds of years, my hearing finally returned. In the darkness, I could hear reverberating, blubbering sobs. Somehow, remembering how to move, I slowly fluttered my eyes open. There I was, laying back in the fully reclined easy chair in Daniel's living room. I quickly inhaled all of the air I could at once, shocked and relieved to be conscious again. I shot my sensitive eyes over to the couch where the crying noise was coming from, and to my absolute astonishment, there sat Daniel and Roddy, fully alive and their limbs and organs intact. Daniel was an absolute mess. He was on his side in the fetal position there on the far end of the couch, clutching a small pillow to his stomach. With every struggled breath, he let out an animal-like sound of sorrow and shock. The cushion under him was soaked in sweat and tears. Roddy held a hand to his back, moving it in circles of attempted comfort. Roddy's face was straight ahead toward the TV, completely blank, lacking any semblance of emotion. His eyes were fixed in a wide, unblinking, thousand-yard stare. I leaned up in the easy chair, not taking my amazed gaze off of the two troubled survivors. "Roddy?" I said, the dreamlike insanity of my former life and death quickly melting away as I got my bearings. Centimeter by centimeter, he slowly turned toward me, his big brown eyes looking like they belonged to a dead man.
I felt everything, he whispered, looking not at me, but somehow through me.
He then slowly turned his head back toward the TV that wasn't even on. Daniel continued to be inconsolable there on the couch.
I felt everything.
Daniel didn't return to work until halfway through December. It took him 3 days to even talk again. He holed himself up in his room, mostly. Roddy was quicker to recover, although he always seemed to be aware of an invisible threat, anxiously looking around dark corners and keeping way too many lights on at night. I only know all of this because in the weeks and months following Halloween, I returned back to Daniel's place every single day.
Roddy stayed as well. Together, we helped each other. We helped each other realize that what we had gone through was not reality, but rather just an ill side effect of a strange drug. A drug that Roddy never forgave his older brother for giving him, regardless of his pleas and denial of having any knowledge of it causing bad trips for its users. My personal recovery was challenging as well, and I had to go to intensive therapy for months. I still can't sit outside on a summer's night, the sound of insects too reminiscent of the evil noise that had been so deeply burned into my memory. I still gasp at the sound of a sprinkler turning on. I'm wary of big dogs now, and can't even buy fake leather goods anymore. In spite of the horrors I had faced, a shining silver lining had revealed itself and had remained. Although with a terrible cost, I had acquired, at long last, true friends. Brothers, bound by our traumas. Forever understanding each other deeper than anyone else could. To this day, we are almost inseparable, even after all these years.
You've been listening to Plant X by Sam Morris. Sam Morris is a lifelong writer, just not in the usual sense. He was born to a musical family and has played piano and sang his entire life. He has also written songs for over 20 years. Having been a longtime horror fan, he first started writing short stories in 2022 and instantly loved it as a creative outlet, especially since it was so different from his usual world of music. Translating the art of songwriting into the form of short stories has proven very therapeutic to Sam, who must reach into the darker parts of his mind and exorcise the monsters that live there. You know, folks, all in all, I'd say our characters got off easy tonight. Sure, some psychological weaknesses were laid bare, and someone had to experience a fully conscious skinning. But hey, what are you gonna do? As you might recall, last week's story was very sex-focused, and tonight's is centered on drugs. I made some quip last week about drumming up a rock and roll story just to round things out, and I'm happy to tell you that I've made good on that promise. In fact, it's going to be one that I wrote myself, dear listeners. Next week, you will be subjected to both the chilling events that occur in that tale, as well as the more tangible horror of my unchecked narcissism. Be sure to tune in next week for that. And in the meantime, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted and narrated by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Original music provided by Eric Peabody and Nikki McSorley. Finalization by Eric Peabody and Craig Groshek. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at natalie@chillingtalesfordarknights.com to have your work considered for future production. Seeing as how we're all living in a technological nightmare of our own devising, I'll ask you to follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. Not only will you have appeased the dark gods of cyberspace, but you'll be kept in the loop as we prepare more terrifying content. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend becoming a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Otis Gyre's Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, Paul J. McSorley's Fear from the Heartland, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. As for me personally, I'm on most social media as Viking Guitar or Viking Guitar Productions. I'm always on the lookout for new stories to narrate and new music projects to mix or master. If that's of interest to you, feel free to reach out and we can talk turkey. Also, I will be back next week with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.